to call this council and committee meeting to order. Madam Clerk, the roll call.
All members of council are present, Your Worship.
Thank you. A few announcements that I just wanted to go through very quickly. We had the last couple of weekends, some really big events in town, at the Ridgeway end of town, the Canada 150 celebration, then the fireworks at this end of the town, which was two weekends ago. Last weekend, the Ridgeway Fest, which, again, although the weather was predicting rain throughout the weekend, turned out to be a beautiful weekend. I know there were large crowds there, and very well done at that end of the town. This week, I know they're calling for some rain near the end of the week, but we have the Friendship Festival, so let's hold our fingers and hope that goes well. That's from July 13th, starting with the Kitty's Day on the Thursday evening until the 16th. Friday at 9 a.m., the Habitat for Humanity is having its grand opening of the latest construction. They're dedicating their newest house in Fort Erie on Crescent Road. On the 23rd of July, I'll announce that we have another meeting before now and then, but Rick Schuler Memorial Day takes place at the Fort Erie Racetrack, and the Rick Schuler Memorial Race starts at 4:15 p.m. 2 days later, of course, is the Prince of Wales Stakes and big day, July the 25th at the Fort Erie Racetrack. So I urge everyone to come out and support the track. It's having a pretty good year this year so far. Which gets me to just the latest with respect to the Woodbine Entertainment stall policy. There's been some recent movement with respect to that initiative. Minister Sousa and the government have been working with the OLG and Woodbine to try to ensure that that issue is resolved in a fashion that's acceptable to the town of Fort Erie Racetrack. And there's still a fair bit of work to go. There's been, as I said, some small incremental movement which has been beneficial to Fort Erie, but doesn't really resolve the entire issue. We're looking for and anticipating some further movement, not only on the short-term solution, but on the long or Fort Erie. In the meantime, the track has been doing well in terms of its attendance and in terms of the number of local horses that are running, but they don't need impediments from Woodbine, and Woodbine doesn't need to create impediments, so we're counting on the government to make sure that is taken care of. Are there any disclosures of pecuniary interest? I have, Madam Clerk, declaration with respect to Delegation 8.1, Mr. Weaver, and the report that accompanies that, PDS 48-2017. He and I are connected through marriage, his son, one of my daughters, so I'm going to declare, it's not a pecuniary interest, but I think it would be prudent if I didn't participate in the discussion. If there are no other disclosures of pecuniary interest, there are no public notices of upcoming meetings. There are no public meetings. We have a consent agenda. Could I ask for a mover with respect to the items in the consent agenda? Councillor McDermott, I see you. Are there any questions with respect to any of the reports in the consent agenda? Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Just looking at report PDS 44-2017, the sale of lands of, I think, Arthur Street, so it is, yeah. Looking at the third, that council directs that the proceeds from the sale of the subject lands be deposited into a parkland dedication reserve. I would like to make an amendment to that and have the yes, thank you very much, Madam Clerk or Acting Clerk, but to have the proceeds be dedicated to the Bay Beach Master Plan.
Did you have a specific amendment that you wish to make with respect to this report, Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, this was provided by the clerk just now, that the 2017 capital budget be amended to increase the Bay Beach capital project by $52,800 with funding from the Parkland Reserve. I'm not seeing that this is the amendment that I would like to put forward.
Okay, so prior to doing that, we need to move this report out of the consent agenda. We can move to do that.
Yeah, let's move. If you would like to do it that way, we could do it that way. Yeah.
Okay. So you're moving that we remove report PDS 44-2017 from the consent agenda?
Yes.
Questions or comments? All those in favor? Now you wanted to proceed with an amendment to that report?
Did you want to do the consent agenda first and then do this report?
We're here. Why don't we just deal with it?
All right, yes. Well, looking at the amendment that was passed on to me by the clerk, I don't understand why we have to amend the 2017 capital budget. We're selling some lands, and we're going to be receiving $52,800 from the lands, and they're going to dedicate it to parkland reserves. I want to just make the amendment that we dedicate it to the Bay Beach Master Plan. I don't understand why we would have to amend the capital budget.
Because it would constitute an amendment to the monies that we've already allocated to the project. But Mr. Jansen, perhaps you can explain that.
Yes, through the mayor to Councilor Lubritz. With those monies, I understand we would want to actually increase the current approved amount for the Bay Beach Implementation Capital Project. So the funds would effectively go into the Parkland Reserve, and then the amendment on the floor would increase the funding of the Bay Beach project with those exact funds. So it would be an allocation to the Parkland Reserve with an allocation out to the capital project.
All right. Now I have a clear understanding. Okay, if that's the way it's done, then I'll move forward with the motion that was provided me by the acting clerk that the 2017 capital budget be amended to increase the Bay Beach capital project by $52,800 with funding from the Parkland Reserve.
Would you like to speak to that amendment?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. And the reason I'm asking to make this their amendment, a couple of weeks ago, the Bay Beach Master Plan funding report from Planning Partnership was brought forward. I wasn't at the meeting. I wasn't allowed to participate, obviously, in the discussion. But it came to my attention after the meeting that there was a lot of things that had happened. There was things that were deferred. I spoke with some of the councilors just before this meeting tonight, and I have no understanding of exactly what happened now, but I am assured by other councilors that we're definitely moving forward with the project. We're definitely going to find the funding for the project, and this, I think, would be a perfect fit if we're looking for the funding and we're committed to do it. Then this would be a perfect fit to make sure that the funding is there when the time comes that we're looking for it.
Any questions or comments by any other members of council? Councilor Passero?
Thank you, Your Worship. I can't support this amendment. Our policy has been that when we sell property or when we have surplus funds, we put it back into reserve, and that at a later date or a more appropriate date with proper notice and projects and reports, we decide whether or not we want to take that money out of a reserve. I just think that this is bad policy, that the first time we have an opportunity before us that we're either selling something or money is back, that one of us can pick a favorite project and say, let's direct it towards that. I just think it's bad policy. I think the time to decide where we will get the extra funds, if we decide we need the extra funds, would be when the tendering comes back, and then we can ask for a report as to where we could get those funds. Parkland dedication may be one of the reserves that is brought up, but I would prefer to wait until that time to decide how we're going to disperse these funds. I just don't want to go down the path that every time we have some extra dollars, that night, with very little notice, we're going to decide where it's going to go. Thank you, Your Worship.
Councillor Butler, then Councillor Zanko. I saw you first, so you go ahead.
Thank you, Your Worship. I agree with Councillor Passero. I don't think it's a good idea either. I also believe that, you know, we should be having consultation with staff to decide where it's going to be best appropriated. So that I won't be supporting that amendment either.
Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, Your Worship. I just wanted to clarify to Councillor Lubert's point. I am in support of the project, and I'm 100% behind moving forward with it. Why I didn't support the additional allocation is because my constituents have already stressed to me that they're very happy that we found consensus and that we're moving forward on the project, but they wouldn't be happy with additional funding going towards the project. So out of respect, I just wanted to provide you with that explanation.
Anyone else? Then I'll call the question with respect to the amendment. I'm sorry, Councillor Lubberts, go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. Just a question to staff. Councillor Pizzero mentioned that it's our policy, and he talked about the policy and how we allocate funds. If I remember correctly, we have done this in the past where funds have come available and a councillor or councillors have thought that we could use that monies elsewhere, and so we dedicate it to a certain project. I don't think it's a favorite project of any one particular councillor, because what I'm hearing from all the councillors that I've talked to, they said they're dedicated to the project. So this isn't cherry picking a project. This isn't my favorite project that I want to do this. This is something that we've all committed to. Everybody says that we're going to find the funding. And so I don't know that that would be the case. I don't know that it's our policy, right, specifically to just put it in the reserves and then discuss it at budget times. And going back to what Councillor Zanko was talking about is, you know, your constituents, I understand your constituents' concern about putting monies and spending monies if it's going to affect the general levy. But if we're committed to this project, your constituents, and from the conversation that I had before council, I am completely confused as to what happened 2 weeks ago. And your constituents, I think we need to explain to them, if we're committed to this project, we are going to be spending that money. If you're not committed to the project, then you're not going to be spending that money. So I need some clarification on what happened over the last 2 weeks at the meeting, because I am completely confused as to what I'm being told now, what's going on with it. And if we're looking for the funding, then as time goes by and we see opportunities to place funding for that project, I think we should jump on the opportunities.
So you did raise a question about what the policy is of the municipality with respect to distribution of funds on the sale of the property. Mr. Jansen, can you speak to that?
The sale of lands in the reserve policy are by default assigned to certain reserve funds. In this case, I believe it's related to specific provisions for parklands. But certainly council may consider at any point changes to that those allocations.
Okay, so before I go to Councillor Zanko, just to clarify this, we had a report last month with respect to the Bay Beach project, which identified what were anticipated costs, which exceeded what the original estimates were from the consultant that had put together the Bay Beach master plan project. Some of those costs included a large amount for contingency, which hadn't been included in the initial amounts. We may or may not have to pay those contingency expenses. Some of them related to some costs that we anticipate will be incurred, but whether they are or whether they aren't, the project is going to be tendered, including all of the components of the master plan. Those items that exceed what's in our budget for this year and next year will be identified as provisional items, and those provisional items will be bid on as well by anyone that wishes to tender on the contract. We may get favorable pricing. Let's hope we don't get less favorable pricing. But if we get favorable pricing, that puts us in a position to determine how much money we actually will require, and it may be that we'll be able to cover more than we anticipate. So I believe what some of your colleagues on council are saying, Councillor Lubberts, is that in the first instance, they want to see what the actual prices are going to be, exactly where we are with respect to the project, the full build-out of the project. Some of the components can be built immediately. Some could be deferred, but we'll have a much better understanding when we have the tendering and we see what the costs are going to be, not only for the items that are going to be immediately, but for some of the provisional items. So I can't speak for my colleagues on council. I can tell you what I've heard and how I've processed it in my brain. Councillor Zanko.
Actually, you said what I was thinking quite perfectly, so thank you.
probably not as eloquently as you would have, but I got through it. So I think that's where we are. So I'm going to call the vote with respect to this. All those in favor of the amendment? Opposed? That is defeated. That report is still on the floor for questions or comments. Mr. Passero.
Thank you, Worship. A question through you to our planning staff. Have we had dialogue with Rivera, the owner-operators of the residence on Garrison? I know that they had some concerns as this development had been proceeding, and I just wanted to make sure that they had touched base with planning staff to convey those concerns and that we're working with them and the owners of the development.
Mr. Brady. Sorry, Ms. Dolch, you snuck up on me. There you go.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to the counselor. Yes, we did meet with Rivera, Mr. Forche at Rivera, and both myself and the developer, and he is working with them to address their concerns as we move forward.
Thank you, Your Worship.
Danko?
Thank you, Your Worship. My question is with regard to report PDS 45-2017.
Still on 44.
Oh, okay, sorry.
That's been removed from the package, so we're still on 44. Any other questions with respect to this? Ms. Dolch, maybe you could answer a couple of questions that I have. One is really just process, and the report says that makes reference to other costs associated with the disposal of municipal land. Other costs are covered in part through the sale of the property. The report, in particular the fourth recommendation, says that council directs that the sale be subject to the applicant being responsible for all associated costs. Aside from the appraisal, which I understand is $250 and is paid up front by the applicant and then first, are there other costs that the municipality bears, or are all other costs going to be borne by the purchaser?
Through you, to yourself, those are the costs. The appraisal costs are what we're lacking. The $250 deposit really doesn't cover the cost of the appraisal. There are surveying costs as well that will be incurred.
Are those not paid by the purchaser?
Through what happens is when the land sale comes through, all the costs that we've kind of incurred comes off that sale price. So that $52,800 that they pay, any costs that have been incurred in terms of the appraisal, and we have some of the survey work done already from previous applications, but that would be covered as well.
So that's not paid by the purchaser?
No, we can clarify with the clerk.
Acting clerk?
Your Worship, yes, the reference plan cost is covered by the applicant. They're responsible for those costs. What we have seen in the past is the appraisal cost wasn't quite covering, but we have increased it now.
If there's a shortfall, it would come out of the proceeds of sale.
Yes, okay, it wouldn't be very much.
I have one other question, if I might, and that is I note that there's no intention for an immediate point of access out to Garrison Road, although this parcel would include frontage on Garrison Road. Wouldn't it be prudent for there to be a point of access out to Garrison?
The right now, the subdivision has a block fronting onto Garrison, which isn't part of a plan of condominium as of yet. So there is no access through the actual development of the subdivision through to Garrison. The actual access will go out to Arthur Street and out to Louisa. So there'll be two points of access for the actual single detached homes that will be as part of the subdivision. There will be a condominium application coming forward in the next few years with regard to Garrison, the parcel that fronts onto Garrison Road. And originally it was more of a P-loop design, but again, that was just a concept at the time when it was draft plan approved.
And so staff is satisfied that is there going to be an access point over to Concession Road? Will that go through?
Not at this time. There is a neighborhood plan concept that we prepared, which shows that ultimately going across. But right now, we needed to have two points of access for the subdivision, which is what he's securing now through to Arthur Street and then down through Louisa.
And for the neighborhood plan concept to be implemented, there'd have to be some further acquisitions, I presume?
Yes. Obviously, we have the retirement home to the east, which obviously would have to sell some of their land to acquire that access point.
That's Councillor Passero's question. Okay, thank you very much. Are there any other questions with respect to PDS 44-2017? If not, all those in favor of the recommendations in the report? Opposed, that is carried. Are there any, Councillor Zank, I'm going to go to you then. You said PDS 45?
Yes, with regard to PDS 45. And my question actually is to Ms. Dolch. I see she's already sat back down. But what I'm wondering is, with regard to the NIRO draft plan approval extension, I know that some of the area residents on NIRO have stressed some concern about the aquifer. And I know when I had talked to staff last about the plan, I believe it was, I don't know if it was yourself or perhaps Jeremy, he had mentioned that there was going to be an inclusion in the plan to ensure that there was no wells being built. And I think the Conservation Authority were looking at the aquifer process and trying to put some planning around that. I just wanted to confirm if that's being done.
Through you to the councillor. Yes, that is. So we've been looking at that. Obviously, when they originally proposed it, there is no proposals for wells, but we do understand the residents' concerns that, you know, in the future they could put in wells. So we're looking, as part of the subdivision agreement as it goes forward, we'll put in the special provisions to ensure that it does indicate that they do have to be on cistern.
Excellent. Thank you.
Before you go, are there any other questions on this particular report? I had a couple of questions. The first one was the request for an extension was for a year from May of this year, and yet this is giving essentially a six-month extension. Is there a particular reason for that?
The extension request, obviously we do some temporary extensions until we can get them to in front of council. They're asking for a short-term extension. They do have their plans in under review at this time for a subdivision agreement, so we don't think they'll need any additional time, more than the 6 months that's required.
Note that the report suggests that if there are problems, staff back to our attention.
Yes.
Comfortable with the six, with November.
With the six, right now, at the time when we did receive the extension, we didn't have the final subdivision agreement application in and paid for. Now we do, and we're working through that process.
I don't know if you're familiar with the 2007 EIS.
Generally, there's some blocks of conservation. Yeah.
I also don't know whether there's any evidence of bats in that neighborhood. I mean, I understand what the Conservation Authority is doing. It seems rather peculiar that they would hold up the whole process for a lengthy period of time, put the developer in a position of having to request extensions, and then really put up a potential further delay by requesting an additional update to the EIS. And I guess that's a concern that you and your colleagues in the planning department have.
That's correct. We have a similar concern. Obviously, we've reviewed the regional policy plan. There is an exemption in there for existing draft plans of approval that they don't need to meet the policies of the natural heritage section in Section 7 of their policy plan. So in our opinion, it's not really warranted. I know the NPC is coming on behalf of the region, but that's our position.
Any other questions or comments on that report? Any other questions of any of the other reports in the consent agenda? Thank you. I had a question, Mr. Walsh, maybe you can answer it. In terms of the IS-19, the Fortery Transit branding and marketing, are we going to be doing any advertising on the buses and the bus stops, the shelters, generate some extra revenue to cover these?
Yeah, you mean we can expand the for-pay advertising?
Well, there would be no benefit in us letting people do it for free.
Eventually, that's the plan. We do have a budget plan for advertising revenue, yes.
Okay, good. Thank you. And are there any other questions? If not, I'll call the question. All those in favor of the reports and recommendations in the consent agenda? None opposed? That is carried. That takes us then to planning and development services. And is that Councillor McDermott? Councillor Butler. Good evening.
Thank you, Your Worship. Planning and Development Services is now opened, and we do have a presentation or a delegate here this evening.
Mr. Weaver. If you could come to the podium, please, and state your name for the record and your address. And then after your presentation, stay at the podium so that if councillors have any questions, you can answer them.
Thank you. Dan Weaver, 647 Kensington Court, Fort Erie. Mayor Redekop and Council, thank you for your time this evening. I hope you've all had time to read my submission. That I submitted to Mr. Stevenson. It's fairly precise, so I won't take much of your time tonight. Just add a few comments that I have. Prior to adding to the height of the fence behind my property between my neighbor and my home, I spoke to both my neighbor on my left and my neighbor on the rear, and they had no objection whatsoever to the fence. Hindsight's 20/20. I should have spoke to the condo owners, and in particular, I should have spoke to the president of the condo association, and more importantly, I should have filed for a building permit. That's certainly a lack of foresight on my part, and I do apologize to staff for that, for not doing so. Actually, it never even crossed my mind, but like I said. In viewing the fence from the various angles, I really felt there was no effect on the condo owners. When notice from the town went out to the neighbors, some of the neighbors on the right-hand side said they actually had to go around behind my house and look and see what the fence looked like because they could not see it. And they were also happy that someone had finally built on the lot, hiding the, for lack of better terms, the mess behind the fence. The fence that exists today, I've got a picture, is not very attractive in that I have used some of the old wood and I used some new wood because obviously I was short. I fully plan to stain the old wood or the new wood to match the old wood. It'll be attractive. I've already started to grow ivy on it, which has taken hold. And I would say by this time next year, the fence should be at least half covered in ivy. Can I give you this picture now? I had 15 to 16 foot evergreen trees brought in for the back. So there is very little of the fence that is actually showing. It'll certainly be attractive when it's all done. I feel the real complaint here was in the drainage problem on my property. And until 2 weeks ago, it was a concern, and certainly I can appreciate that from the condo owners. The swale, in accordance with the grading plan from the town, has been completed. In addition to the swale, I added a French drain under the swale, so there's absolutely no possibility that any water can drain onto the neighbors. The president of the condo association took pictures and communicated to me that the swale and the French drain, the objection to the fence at the time was perhaps justified when looking at the whole picture. However, now I see no reason that it really affects anyone. In fact, I think it's an addition to the neighborhood. I have a letter from my neighbor to the right, and unfortunately, we didn't have him come in as a delegate tonight. He says, this is to state that I, Kurt Colbarton, at 639 Kensington Court, a neighbor of Dan Weaver, has no intention to extend my fence beyond its present height, since my view to the property on Phillips Street is already blocked by several mature trees, which is the same for the neighbors going to the right. That's all I have to add to the report. I'll be glad to take any questions.
Do any members of council have any questions? Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to Mr. Weaver. Mr. Weaver, I just wanted to let you know, when we spoke yesterday, I had mentioned the question that I had, and you agreed with regard to a privacy wall. I did have the opportunity to speak with staff, and apparently the privacy walls have the same height restriction as a fence. So I just wanted to clarify that since we did speak about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Any other councillors have any questions? I have a couple of questions for you, if you don't mind. So I've seen some of the houses that you've built. They've always been very well manicured, very well built. And I understand that this fencing is basically, if I'm not mistaken, it's about 2 more feet.
A little more than that.
Yeah. A little more.
The fence, the existing fence was 9 foot five or 9 foot six. I'm a little over 11 feet, almost 11 and a half feet, not across the whole back though.
Right. And the portion that actually is going to be higher than the other fencing, the fencing that you are having on the sides, they're going to be to code, correct?
The ones to the right at the back, as you're looking at it, are the original fence that was built when the development was first built out, I believe, 10 years ago. That was probably in the site plan agreement.
Okay. And the current fence that you are talking about that will be in excess of 11 feet, that is actually not going to prevent your neighbors from looking out. That's just to create a barrier from the house across the street, which really is kind of a working house. Is that not right? They
kind of what?
They work out of their house there, don't they?
They operate basically a
garage.
They operate a carnival business.
Okay.
They have the carnival rides in and out of there, more so in the summertime because it's carnival season, and that's what I'm trying to block.
Okay.
And a couple of transport trucks.
Okay, that makes sense to me. Thank you. Councillor Passera?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Weaver. I agree with you. I don't really have any issue with the fence itself or the height of the fence. What I struggle with, and I'd like to get your comment on, is the way that the process has unfurled. And had you come before council to ask for the variance, it would have given the neighboring homeowners to your east an opportunity to formally come and either support or object. And the one thing that I struggle with, and I'd like to get your thoughts, is if we allow your fence to stay, it's almost endorsing it's okay to, you know, beg for forgiveness later than permission now. What are your thoughts on how we can justify this?
As I stated, and that's a certainly legitimate question, as I stated earlier, hindsight is 20/20, and the business that I'm in, I'm certainly aware of bylaws, and I should have come in, at least spoke to staff, and then filed the application for the permit. There's no denying that. Definitely no denying that.
Okay. My second question is just for my own clarification in your presentation, and I just want to read from it tonight. It says, prior to adding to the height of the present fence behind my property. But you didn't add a piece to a present fence. You've rebuilt another fence higher. Can you kind of explain what's existing and what's new?
The existing fence.
For you, Madam Chair.
The existing fence was 9 foot 5 in height with 4x4s every 8 foot section. I've had 4 6x6s cemented in the ground 4 feet, and for 4 sections, 4.5 sections to carry the 6x6s carry the load for the additional fence. So on the bottom part of the fence, I used the new wood. And on the top part, I removed the pickets from the old fence and added them to the new fence. That answers the question or not?
It does. It sounds like it wasn't a complete removal and complete reinstall. It sounds like you used components and built onto it and replaced certain posts to carry additional weights.
That's right, yes.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome, Councillor. Any other councillors? Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
That brings us to PDS, or report number PDS-46-2017, proposed amendment to draft plan of condominium Deerwood Lane, condominium 1736105, Ontario Inc. John Kendall, can I have a mover, please? Thank you, Your Worship. That report is on the floor. Are there any questions from any of my colleagues? Your Worship?
Thank you, Chair. I just had a question with respect to this drainage issue, which seems to be of greatest concern to some of the residents. And I know that there was some late correspondence received in response to an email sent out by Mr. Kernahan to notify the residents. The latest email that I have came in at 5:07 p.m. I'm wondering if there's been any further dialogue between staff and the resident.
Mr. Kernahan?
Through you, Madam Chair, to the Mayor. No, I haven't had the opportunity excuse me, to respond to the resident, but we have done some investigation and we do have answers to his concerns. In particular, he was requesting clarification on whether or not there was to be an easement over a portion of his property. The answer to that question is no. The easement identified on that plan was referring to an existing easement over some lots that are to the south of him. Further to that, there was some concern regarding what the finished floor elevations would in fact be when the dwellings in phase two were constructed. And I intend on responding to him that, you know, that's also of great concern to staff. And to that end, we've included two conditions of draft plan approval related to ensuring that the subdivision is built out in a way that's consistent with the lot grading plan that we've reviewed. One in particular requires that the finished floor elevations be surveyed after after the foundations have been installed. And the second is related to a performance bond that we're requiring to be submitted as a condition of draft plan approval.
If I might, Madam Chair, and that performance bond is relates specifically to drainage?
To lot grading and drainage, yeah.
Okay. And how can the residents be assured that this then will proceed in accordance with whatever conditions of approval are required?
Well, the way the subdivision process rolls out is that in order to register the plan and obtain a building permit, those conditions need to be satisfied prior to that.
And if I might, Madam Chair, as the construction moves forward, there will be continuous monitoring by staff, both the building inspectors and planning and engineering as required?
Yeah, through you, Madam Chair, that one condition related to the requirement for the submission of surveyed finished floor elevations came from our chief building inspector, so he, in conjunction with our development coordinator, Jeremy Korovar, will be monitoring that.
Thank you. Madam Chair, at this stage of the game, I'm satisfied that the staff has done what they can. I know that Mr. Kendall has done a lot of work to try to accommodate the residents. The situation that occurred over on Hibbard just around the corner certainly didn't help him from my perspective, but I would hope that staff will be acutely aware of the concern that council has relative to this drainage issue, and we really, I don't think, can afford to have another development in that small neighborhood go awry. So I would hope that staff will be acutely aware of our concerns. On that basis, I'm going to support this report.
Any other councillors?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Clerk or Madam Chair. Mr. Kernahan, the finished floor elevation, it's a condition of his draft plan approval. Is that what you said earlier?
Through you, Madam Chair, the condition which becomes part of the draft plan approval is a requirement that the developer, when he constructs the foundations of these dwellings, submit a surveyed elevation so we can check that against the approved lot grading plans and ensure that it meets, that it is consistent with those.
So here's my dilemma. We're here tonight to approve all of that under these here conditions. Are these conditions written in stone already?
Through you, Madam Chair, they will form part of the approval of council this evening. So they're stone, as you say.
All right, so like tonight we're going to be voting. If for whatever reason the finished floor elevation isn't proper, does it come back to council and then we will decide how we're going to mitigate the problem? Because the mayor mentioned we had a problem around the corner on Hibbert, and there was a footing. We knew about it when the footing was in, before the building went up, that the building was too close to the road, and it never came back to council to decide whether to move the footings back to the proper setback, and the building went up, and now it's a major problem. This situation, if the finished floor elevation isn't correct, does it come back to council, or does staff just undertake that and mitigate it themselves?
Through you, Madam Chair, what we've attempted to do is build in some mechanisms to allow staff to rectify that situation rather than allow it to continue as was. So we're building into the agreement mechanisms to fix that incorrect finished floor elevation and make it correct.
So if for whatever reason the builder says, well, I had to raise it, is staff going to go back and say, no, this is what we agreed to, this is the height, and then you need to do whatever you need to do to get that finished floor down? Or is it going to be mitigated and then we'll have the neighbors coming over and talking to us and saying, well, that's not what we agreed to? And then obviously, I mean, I've seen it before. It's, wow, you know, once we're into it that deep, we can't turn back. That's my problem. I don't want these guys coming back and saying, well, we couldn't do it. And I know we had some problems with this development before, and they just went ahead and did it. And now we have a problem over there.
I think Mr. Brady wants to answer this one.
Through you to Councilor Lubbers. The mechanism that we put in place is that will be the floor elevation. If the floor elevation is different and the developer wants to argue with someone, they will be back in front of council asking for you to consider that. But we will not be varying that.
Okay, thank you. As long as that's what I needed to know, that floor elevation, that's what it's going to be, and there's no changing it. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? I have a couple, if you don't mind. So I have some major concerns just on behalf of my constituents who I've been in contact with quite frequently. And do you realize that the flooding that occurred there earlier this year, and it wasn't a pretty sight for them, so they were using pump machines to get the water out of there. And my concern is, do we have enough wrapped up in the bond to be sufficient for funding to fix a problem if the problem occurs with respect to drainage?
Madam Chair, yes, we've collected more. We've gone over and above what we ordinarily would do to the extent that we've required a condition for a performance bond, which is somewhat unusual, in order to ensure that we have enough in place to do that.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Okay. Seeing that there are no further questions, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor of the report? That motion is carried. Moving on to report number PDS-47-2017, High Point Estate Subdivision Agreement and Pre-Servicing Approval, North End of Green Acres Drive, west of Pettit Road. Can I have a mover for that? Councillor Zanko? That report is now on the floor. Any comments or questions? Councillor Nutt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to Mr. Brady, has a developer been identified for this project, Mr. Brady?
Mr. Brady?
Yes, a developer has been identified for it. It is the Marina Developments Limited.
Okay, I just have some concerns with what has gone on in Black Creek in the last little while. With I see that in the report you did address a certain number of issues as far as security bond, et cetera, for the pre-servicing, but the pre-servicing always makes me a little nervous now since running into the issue in Black Creek with some of the unforeseen delays that we had over there. I was just concerned that if we continue to allow too much pre-servicing, it will lag, and then people's quality of life would be impacted. So I just would like your assurance that I see that in the report we have asked for several deposits and the cash, and that I know staff has done a good job this year with the developer over there and ensuring and holding them the schedule. I just want to make sure that when we're doing the pre-servicing, that that's going to be the modus operandi for staff moving forward.
To try to answer that question, yes, we're going to try to keep on top of it. One of the things that distinguishes this developer from the one that we've had discussions with in Black Creek is this developer is also the house builder. So this developer will be the builder of the homes in this property, and I have confidence that they'll be moving forward in an expeditious fashion.
Thank you, Councillor. Any other comments or questions, Your Worship?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We know who the developer is, Marina Green Acres Developments Limited, but we don't know who's behind that, and ordinarily we do request that information.
Mr. Brady.
I can, sorry, yes, I understand what your question is. I can send you this is the name of the corporation, and that's the corporation that we've always dealt with. But if you're looking for the actual owners of the corporation,
yes.
I'll have to provide it to you at a later date. I don't believe I have it right now.
Yeah, please do that, because we don't know whether we've got a conflict or not.
I understand. I can assure you that this developer is not a local developer, if that helps you at all. And I know it's not completely.
That's fine. Yeah. That's fine. I just noticed that wasn't information that was available. It usually is. I do have two other questions. One has to do with condition 20 of the draft conditions. It's found on page 15. It refers to the reconstruction of Ryan Avenue. And I wasn't able to locate that on the map.
Through you to the mayor. We apologize for that. Ryan Avenue obviously is in Crystal Beach. Obviously, it's just a typographical error.
So this is to be the reconstruction of Green Acres Drive from
Regional Road 3.
For a minute?
Yeah, from Regional Road 3, approximately 280 meters north.
Which is where Green Acres Drive would end now?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. And then the other question I might have, Madam Chair, relates to condition 24, which is on the next page. And this talks about the vehicles, construction vehicles, coming in from the east, from Pettit Road onto Sharon Drive, which is a road that's going to be temporarily constructed.
Built.
Through you to the mayor. Yes, that is correct. Originally, when we went through this draft plan approval, there was a lot of opposition for construction traffic going through Green Acres Drive. And at that time, it was requested that a construction access, just a gravel construction access, be constructed out to Pettit.
And one other question that follows that. This appears to be part of phase one construction. So when would the municipality require that Sharon Drive be made a permanent road?
Before the subdivision is final, it would definitely have to be opened up for a permanent roadway. But just for the construction access, it can remain gravel during the construction period. So at the completion, near the completion of phase one, as they continue to service the site, they can use that for construction purposes. As it starts to, because the problem is if we require them to finish the road too early, it will just be damaged with the construction vehicles. So we want to make sure that the road that we assume in the end isn't severely damaged, so we want to hold that off.
That raises another question. Do we have, if I might, Madam Chair, do we have any understanding of when it is, or do we have any mechanism to require this road to be constructed at some point other than the end of the completion of Phase 3?
Right now, no. The idea was that was going to be a construction access until the end of phase three.
I would think that we'd want to look at that because I don't know that the people in the current Green Acres development, which is going to be serviced primarily by one road off of Highway 3 and maybe another road a little further to the east coming through that neighborhood for the number of new residences that could be built when you get to phase two and phase three. I would think that we would want to require that Sharon be constructed, even if it's at some point the base asphalt coating. I would think that we would want to do that sooner rather than later to provide another outlet for traffic.
Through you to the mayor. And if you want to add that as part of an addition to the special provisions before you approve the report, we can look into that as part of the end of phase one. But I would recommend that if that's the case, that we would only require them to do a base coat the base coat asphalt and completion at the end of phase three for the top coat.
I think what I'd like to do, Madam Chair, is move that we amend condition 24 to provide for the completion of Sharon Drive by the end of phase two. And whatever wording staff might suggest, if that carries, whatever wording staff might suggest could then be included in the bylaw that will come before council next week. Is that acceptable to the clerk?
Madam Clerk. Yes, Your Worship.
Okay, so I'd like to move that amendment. Now, can the clerk read that back? So, that the condition 24 provide for the completion of Sharon Drive by the end of phase two of the project in a condition acceptable to staff.
Read it.
Yeah, I just read it. Do you have that, Madam Clerk? Thank you.
Okay, that amendment is now on the floor. Does anybody have any questions with respect to that amendment?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just looking at Appendix 1 and then trying to turn everything around so it matches Appendix 2, I'm not seeing where Sharon Drive outlets to.
Pettit.
I don't see Pettit anywhere here. That's the existing on, if I'm looking at it, on the right side of Appendix 1?
Mr. Brady or Ms. Dolch, would you like to answer that? Ms. Dolch, thank you.
Through you to the counselor. If you look actually at Appendix 2, the map itself doesn't show Pettit very clearly, but if you look at the key plan, you can see Pettit Road, which is to the east of the proposed site.
Which one's the key plan?
The key plan, it's on Appendix 2 in the top right-hand corner. Key plan.
Oh, that little thing.
Yeah, the very little thing, yes, in the top. And that is Pettit Road. The first street you see to the east, that's Pettit Road. So Sharon Drive will continue over to Pettit.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I get it now. Yeah, thanks.
Any other questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question on the amendment. All those in favor? The amendment passes. Are there any speakers to the motion as amended? None? Then I will call the question. All those in favor of this report? Motion carried. That brings us to the next report, PDS-48-2017, Appeal of Minor Variance Decision to Council. Can I have a mover? Councillor McDermott? That report is on the floor. Would anybody like to speak to that? Councillor Zanko?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to Mr. Brady. Mr. Brady, so it's my understanding that the original fence was 9'5". Wouldn't that necessarily be contradicting the bylaw of 7'6"? So I guess where I'm getting at with this is if Mr. Weaver didn't in fact build this fence, the original fence would have been in non-compliance. Am I understanding this correctly, or am I maybe confusing?
Mr. Brady?
It's my understanding, through to Councillor Banco, it's my understanding the original fence met the height requirement, and that it, when the current owner of the property cut it down and then used parts of it to create the fence that's there today, it extended to almost 12 feet. As it's shown in the diagrams.
Okay, so, and I don't know where I read that the original fence was 9'5", so that's not correct.
That's my understanding.
Okay, I do have some additional questions, but I'm interested to hear what my colleagues have to say first.
Any other comments or questions? Councillor Luberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just going back to some of the comments that were made by the delegate earlier, he said that he was going to be planting some evergreen trees, and there were some evergreen trees that blocked the site of the fence. And I'm thinking that if the evergreens are blocking the site of the fence, then I would assume that the evergreens are also going to be blocking the site that the fence is trying to block for the resident. And I know through my own experience with living at a home where the lot behind was empty and a new home was built there, the homeowner, instead of putting up a fence, that's exactly what he did. He planted an evergreen type tree and certain distance apart, and he explained to me, and grew them within 3 or 4 years, and it was like a fence. that you couldn't see through it. And it was a lot higher than 9 foot, a lot higher than 12 feet. So that might be a recommendation there. If you want to get higher than the bylaw allows, then you might want to look at other alternatives. Amending or making variances to our bylaw is no different, and we've gone through this, the same thing with our setbacks for our housings. And if we're going to do this, we might as well just change the bylaw, because now that we've done it, precedence is set, and that's exactly where we're going to be at. Staff spent a lot of time going over our fence bylaw. They made the recommendations that this be the maximum height. Council had agreed to it, and I'm going to stand behind the bylaw. Thank you.
Mr. Brady?
Thank you. I just wanted to make one comment. The fence bylaw defines fence also to be a hedge, so that as has happened in the past, if the hedge is greater than the fence bylaw as well, that can also be someone can also bring that to our attention, and it will need to be reduced to the height.
Councillor Passera.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just if I could get some clarification from Mr. Brady, because I had a similar situation. Is there not also a provision within the fence bylaw that speaks to the hedgerows, that speaks to diameter of the tree? Because I had an incident on Birdie Street where an individual was trying to get a hedgerow cut down, but because it was a series of trees to a certain size, it was deemed no longer to be a hedgerow. It was deemed to be just a series of trees.
Brady?
Through you to Councillor Passero. I think I understand your question. If you have a series of trees in the back and it's not deemed to be a fence, it doesn't meet our definition of a hedge, they can be taller. Absolutely. But if I just wanted to make it clear that a hedge in the classic sense of building, of growing a hedge, once it gets above the level of the that's permitted under the fence bylaw, that, again, we deal with these issues based on complaints. So if someone brings it to our attention, then we would deal with it in the same fashion.
If I could, through you, Madam Chair, to Mr. Brady, just to speak to the process of why this is before council tonight. When there has been a complaint regarding a fence, that's delegated to staff. You have the authority as staff to say yes or no. If it's a no, then the person has the opportunity to appeal to council. Am I right so far?
Through to Councilor Passera. Absolutely, you're right. This matter was dealt with by our bylaw enforcement officers. A report came to me. I determined that the fence didn't meet the criteria that is applicable in the circumstance, and I turned down the request. And at that point in time, the applicant was given the opportunity to appeal it to a further body, which is council.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to Mr. Brady, I'm guessing that there have been situations where an appeal has been made to yourself and it has been granted a variance. Has that happened?
To fully answer your question, to date, no, but there is one that's moving through the process right now that is highly likely that I will grant it.
As our senior member of staff, if you grant approval for that variance, would that come before council to overturn your decision for a final yes or no, or is that delegated at the staff level that if you say yes, it proceeds?
It's delegated at the staff level.
Okay. So I think that, for me, is where this issue hinges on, is because we have delegated this to staff for a yes or a no, and if it's a yes, it never comes to us. So there are situations where certain circumstances in staff's eyes deem it to be permissible. We never find out about it. In this case, and rightfully so, based on the test as applied, this one wouldn't meet the threshold for staff to let it go. And that's why it's before us, because we have the ability to look at other extenuating factors, to hear from the delegate personally, et cetera, et cetera. We have had situations in the past that have come before us. One was in Crystal Beach, where a homeowner put a fence up where they thought it was supposed to be. It turned out it didn't. We granted it. We've had others in the past as well. I wish this had gone through the proper channels. What I have learned in close to 8 years is a lot of times a complaint about a fence is sometimes not about the fence. Whether this is that case or not, I don't know. But in all of the letters of opposition, I never had one instance where somebody said they missed the view of what they used to look at. And to me, that's kind of the threshold of, is this fence causing harm to a neighboring resident? And the one resident actually said that if this goes through, they'd like the opportunity to appeal because they'd like a 12-foot fence. Because they want to block something on the other side of them, which happens to be the applicant's property. So it's not really about the fence itself in this particular instance. So I am leaning towards voting to allow this to stand, only because of what is in behind and what he's trying to block the view of. And, if he is to be believed in his presentation, there are neighbors in that area that have no issue with the fence. I don't know if we can take the condo association president's comment regarding the drain as necessarily being in favor of the fence. I find that to be two different issues. But at this point, given everything, I know why staff have made the recommendation. I completely understand that. The reason it's before us is to kind of give it that second look, and that's why it's here tonight. So I'm waiting to see what other members of council have to say, but those are my thoughts as it stands.
Thank you, Councillor. Any other councillors wishing to speak on this? Councillor Lubert?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I guess my question would go to Mr. Brady. If we look at Appendix 3 in the report, the letter from Mr. Spear and his wife. In this third paragraph, he says, Mr. Weaver elected to build his home on a high profile, hence he created his own problem. What's he mean by building it on the high profile?
Mr. Brady?
I'm looking at Appendix 3. Where is this matter that you're looking at? I'm sorry.
Yeah, the letter from Mr. Spear. Dave Spear and Elsie Spear,
right.
Paragraph 3.
Oh, I see. In the fourth. Oh, okay. In addition to this, once the final grade has been completed and setting the foundation, I tend to. No. I'm just having some difficulty following your. Oh, so it's a different. You're looking at the. Thank you. I'm going to try to guess what Mr. Spear is referring to, and I think it's simply that he believes that Mr. Weaver elected to build his home on a high profile. It's a taller home, so it has a higher profile, and that's my guess. It would be that's based on what I'm reading here.
So I'm going to assume that what this means is the grade level was raised as well. If you built it higher.
It may mean that. I don't think that's the case. I think in this case, it's just that the house itself is a tall house.
Did that meet the height restrictions when it comes to building? Because if it built it higher than it's supposed to be.
There's no issue with the height of this house. The height of the house meets the standards, but it is a taller home than some of the homes in the neighborhood.
Again, we lean right back to the bylaw, then that means that if we get higher houses, then we're going to have to change our height of our fence bylaw, and maybe we'll end up with 14 and 16-foot fences all around town. So,
thank you. Any other councillors? Councillor Zanko?
Thank you. I just wanted to comment, and I do agree with many of my colleagues' points that we obviously don't want to drive around town and see 14-foot fencing. And I understand where staff had come up with their report. But I also understand from Mr. Weaver's perspective, the fence really isn't invasive to property owners' views. Even the property owners to the rear of his property are in favor of having this fence. So I think I'm going to be
supporting Mr. Weaver's request, simply based on the fact, you know, I understand that he didn't go through the proper channels, but this fence is not around his entire property, and really it's not affecting anyone. It's just giving him additional privacy, and I think that the property owners to the rear of his property would also agree that it provides them with some additional privacy. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Zanko. Any other councillors? Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's no councillors that haven't spoke yet. I'd like to just ask one question for you to staff. Are staff satisfied with the structural integrity of this fence? I know it was spoken about that it went from 4x4 to 6x6 posts. Is that a concern, or are we at least happy with the construction? Is that something that has been looked at?
Mr. Brady?
Our staff has not looked at the integrity of this fence. This fence was not in conformity. It was brought to our attention, and we're dealing it from that perspective.
What is the process then if somebody were to complete this process properly? Is a permit required for any fence?
No, permit isn't required for the fence. What's the fence is to be built to the specs, and if someone wishes to create a fence which is taller, then they would normally come to the planning department and ask for a variance to it, and it would go through the process prior to the fence being built.
So in this circumstance, then, I'm guessing moving forward, if the fence remains and there is any issue as far as condition or structural integrity, that would then be referred back to bylaw under our normal fence bylaw to have some type of citation issued for repair or maintenance of the fence?
It could be.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome, Councillor. Any other councillors? Councillor Lubert?
Yes, thank you very much. Just listening to Councillor Passero's comments, this brings up another question. On page 3 of the report, gives the reasons why the director denied the request. And the last one, there was some concerns. There may be concerns, structural concerns, regarding the integrity of the fence. And then it goes on to talk about that the fence blew over. That's why the 6x6 posts were installed, because the fence blew over. Is that correct? Like,
Mr.
Was,
Brady,
was there a problem with the fence before?
Comment on that, Mr. Brady.
As it identifies on page 3, it says there may be structural concerns regarding the integrity of the fence itself. This is a very high, solid wood fence, 4x4 posts were originally installed and had to be replaced by 6x6 fence when the fence blew over. So yes, this fence has blown over and 6x6 fence posts have been put in place. There are concerns of wind loading due to the height of the fence.
So if this fence blows over, where does it blow? Does it blow over to the applicant's property or to someone else's private property?
Mr. Brady?
To a certain extent, and I don't mean this in a whimsical fashion, but nonetheless, it depends upon the direction of the wind. If the wind is blowing one way, then it'll blow onto his property, and if it doesn't, it will blow onto his neighbor's property, as is the case with all fences.
Yeah, we predominantly in Fort Erie, we have a southwest wind. So on a southwest wind, where would we stand?
I'm not certain.
Okay.
Any other comments? Councillor Passero?
Madam Chair, just if I could, through you to the clerk, I just want to remind my colleagues, just because of the recommendation is from staff to deny, that if it is the intent of council to leave the fence, then we would defeat the recommendation, just so that's clear for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Any other councillors? Seeing none, I will pose the question. All those in favor of the report, all those against? That motion is defeated. That moves us along to new business inquiries. Any new business or inquiries? Councillor Zanko?
Thank you. Through you, Madam Chair, to either Mr. Brady or Mr. Walsh. Just a question as I was driving to council tonight. I noticed on Crescent Road, and I would say that it's Crescent Road on the adjacent area of Evelyn. There's two houses there, but there's an area for road allowance, which I would imagine that there's going to be potential subdivision later on down the road. But my question is, whose responsibility is that area for grass cutting? Because it's really, really high in between the two homes there. Would that be the owners of the subdivision, or would it be the town?
Brady?
Whoever is the owner of the property is responsible for the grass cutting.
Well, I think technically it would be a road allowance. It's right. It's off Evelyn. So on Crescent Road, if you were to be driving towards Garrison, on your left side would be Evelyn, and on the other side, it just appears to be an unopened road allowance area.
We can look into that.
Okay.
But if it's owned by privately, it's private. But we'll take it. We'll look and see who owns
okay.
the property.
Thank you.
Any other councillors? Councillor Passero, and then your worship.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just as it relates to the last item, through you to the clerk, does us defeating that report automatically grant the request, or does something additional have to happen regarding the fence?
Madam Clerk?
I believe the appeal was lost, so that the recommendation to refuse was lost, so the appeal was won. That's correct.
Okay, so nothing further has to be done in that matter.
No, I don't believe so.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I think we should just check the process on that. I mean, it seems to me that it's in limbo. But I didn't pay attention to the report. I didn't pay attention to the discussion. And I just paid attention at the end because of the conflict that I declared. But I think maybe staff should clarify that. I had two questions. One had to do with the good friends from out of town come in, and we drove through. We were all over the town this weekend. We drove through the subdivision in Crystal Beach, Mars, and then we went through the subdivision in Ridgeway by the lake. And we got down to North Shore Drive. We were talking about the access to the waterfront, the little hockey stick that we used to call it. That isn't signed, and I'm wondering, Madam Clerk, if there's some plan to have that signed, because once you get down from North Shore Drive to the waterfront, there's actually a significant amount of waterfront that the municipality owns, and that didn't appear to be signed. I think it should be. Is there a plan on that?
Mr. Brady or Madam Clerk?
Not that I'm aware of. The piece of property that you're referring to is waterfront, which the municipality owns. It's not a road allowance?
It's not a road allowance. It was granted access to the waterfront, into a small portion of waterfront was granted at the time the Ridgeway Shores development was approved, probably years ago or more, maybe around 15 years ago. So it is municipal property. It is access to the waterfront. And if it isn't marked, I think it should be marked, because if it's not marked, people wouldn't know that it's actually a public property. I wonder if we could look into that.
Yes.
Second question I had relates to an issue that was raised by Councillor Lubertz we received a memo. It had to do with the Migratory Birds Convention Act, and I was a little surprised at the conclusion that was reached by our staff, that because two municipalities in Niagara are remotely familiar with the Migratory Birds Convention Act, and aren't really strictly enforcing it, we shouldn't be too concerned about it. I had some communication with Mr. Brady, and then finally he and I chatted about this. So, Mr. Brady, I'm, if I may, Madam Chair, I wonder if we could get Mr. Brady to explain how it is that this municipality then, when there are new subdivisions being proposed, how is it that we would protect that part of the wildlife that consists of nesting birds at a most vulnerable time in their lives?
Mr. Brady?
Certainly. I'll start by at the beginning, if you will. The land that we're talking about is land which has been established for development. So the land is not land which has been identified to be maintained for a biological habitat. If it was biological habitat, it would be designated, or would be designated as a part of the plan of subdivision, as environmental protection in some form. So these lands are not those lands. These are lands which the trees will be removed at some point in time. So right now we have a condition which says that developers may not remove vegetation between May 1st and July 31st. And the reason that that's there was because in the past it would appear that the federal government has identified that that is the migratory bird period. So it was interpreted by someone in the past that if that's the migratory bird nesting period, therefore the trees shouldn't be removed. We went back to Wildlife Canada and asked them if our interpretation is correct, and they said no. They said it's quite possible and they don't have any issues with the trees being removed as long as migratory bird nests were protected in some fashion. And we asked them whether or not they wanted a condition placed in subdivisions, and they said no. They said it's not the municipality's responsibility to do that. It's the federal government's responsibility to do that, and they do so upon questions. So on that basis, what we've decided that would be appropriate is that we would identify within the text of the report that the Migratory Bird Act issue is there so that the developers would know that it's there, but that we wouldn't put in a condition because we can't activate the condition. In the past, I understand Pelham tried to put in a condition of this on the basis of the Conservation Authority requesting it. When the Conservation Authority was challenged, they immediately said, oh, no, that's not the case, and therefore the condition was removed. So as staff, we have a responsibility to not put conditions on that we can't enforce. And this condition, we don't believe that we can enforce. We don't believe that there's a rationale behind it. So if someone removes a vegetation in an area that's going to be developed in the future, what we're suggesting is that they not disturb the birds, but that doesn't mean that they can't remove some of the vegetation. And the onus then becomes that of the developer, and the enforcement agency is the federal government. So that's what is being proposed as a part of the response to the council inquiry that was that is in front of council this evening. But we're not trying to suggest that any areas which are being protected for wildlife would be removed. We're also not suggesting that if there's an EIS that's conducted and those areas identified that areas that should be protected, those areas will be protected, and those aren't the areas which are being suggested that the trees could come down on. We're also in the report, and we continued in the report to have requirements that say you're not to remove the vegetation on the property until you have the pre-servicing agreement. And at pre-servicing, then we know that the subdivision is imminent, and so that doesn't remove wooded areas well in advance of when they need to be removed. So we're trying to provide some protection in that respect. But this notion of the prohibition between May 1st and July 31st is the one that we just don't believe that there's any rationale behind that, because the federal government is saying you can remove it as long as it's not a migratory bird that's in there. Not all birds, by the way, are migratory birds.
So, if I might, Madam Chair, just a couple of comments. The discussions that I've had with Mr. Brady give me some hope that we're not going to be completely abandoning what I've been going out flogging for the last 3 years, which is this is a municipality that actually takes a different approach to how we develop. We're trying to embrace the natural heritage features of this municipality because we believe that they're important. They're important to the people that live here. They're important to the people that are moving here. And a number of the developers actually are walking that walk. They're actually realizing that protecting the natural heritage features is a good way to sell homes for more money. So I agree, all birds aren't migratory, but there are two occasions in recent history where developers cutting down trees indiscriminately have created problems. for us as a council or our predecessor and for developers in general. The first one happened probably a dozen years ago. It's that wasteland that sits between Ridge Road, Prospect Point Road to the north of Thunder Bay Road. It was clear cut in the spring at the worst possible time. Didn't do an inventory of what nests were there, but I do know that it created a tremendous uproar and it created a lot of problems and it, for us as a council and for developers because many of the residents were aghast and they're still aghast. We drive by there, we still see that wasteland, and hopefully, if what I hear is correct, there will be some development there soon, and it's a good location. But the other one was more recently, very well-intentioned young man who has a nice plan of subdivision in Ridgeway, went in, apparently given approval by the Conservation Authority to cut the trees down, just cut them all down. Didn't do that at the worst possible time, but rules are never a problem for... In fact, sometimes you don't need rules for prudent, moral individuals who have a broad scope. Rules are necessary for the people that are most likely to break the rules. That's why we have the rules. And so I'm concerned that we're in a situation where we could be criticized for not walking the walk, just talking the talk. And I also don't want us to take the view that we have to protect every tree in town. That's not my motive. I understand that we have some points in our development processes where we can slow down things and we can require developers to do things. But I've been fascinated by some of the things that we request of developers, and I've been fascinated by the extent to which we can require developers to do things that we value. So if we really believe that natural heritage features, wildlife habitats are important, I think we need to get a better handle on this. That's just my view. But what I will do is, and I appreciate Mr. Brady's thought, and I appreciate Mr. Kernahan's research into this, and maybe they just haven't captured entirely how at least I feel about this, but I think we all feel the same way with respect to development in our community. We want development. We want lots of development. But I don't want to change Fort Erie so that it's not what people who live here value or people who are attracted here value. So I'll continue the dialogue with Mr. Brady, but I did want to have an opportunity to hear his comments on how we can at least do some things to protect the wildlife habitat on the one hand. On the other hand, work constructively with developers. And so I'm going to continue the dialogue with Mr. Brady, and maybe we'll come back with something that council can consider. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Worship. Any other business inquiries? Councillor Luberts and...
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I received an email today, and I read it before I came to council, and it was from Casey Bruins. He's a Ridgeway Lion. And I think everybody is aware that the Lions are put together a campaign to raise $85,000 for the playground equipment in Bay Beach. On Sunday morning, I went down for breakfast, for the Lions breakfast, and I made a donation of $200. So Casey Bruin, the Lion that's in charge of it all, sent me an email and asked me to make a challenge to council. And not because they're trying to raise and put the pressure on council, but there was a private resident, citizen, that came forward and said that if council would match, the rest of council would match my donation of $200, he would match the total, which would be, if we all matched, that would be $1,400, and then he would additionally match the $1,400, which would give the Lions $2,800. And the Lions apparently have committed that if that all happens, the Lions will match the total $2,800 and put that into the fund. So a $200 donation could end up being a $5,600 start to their project. So I just wanted to let council know that the challenge is out there, and if we would like to see a a $1,400 donation by council turn into a $5,800 benefit to the Lions, then I'm sure the Lions would appreciate the effort. Thank you.
Any other counselors? I just have a couple, actually. Just to follow up to Mr. Brady, your explanation to the mayor. What triggers the federal government to enforce?
Through complaints.
And I had down at the Ridgeway Festival, the United Church had a discussion with me with respect to signage that is on the corner of Ridge Road and Dominion. And I know that that's a regional road, and maybe the mayor can pipe up here. But they have a sign that's been there for years. I think they said 80 years. That needs to be replaced. The region is asking them to move it back several feet, which is problematic in itself because there are trees, so they would have to remove those trees. And it's interesting, we're talking about migratory birds, but and the removal of trees. But I think we've removed enough trees in that area, and I'm just wondering if there is a solution that the municipality can find to encourage the region to allow that sign to remain where it is.
I actually have a Public Works Committee meeting tomorrow morning, so I will take it up with staff there tomorrow, and I'll report back to you.
Awesome. Thank you. If there are no other business inquiries, that moves us to business status report. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, then I will turn this back over to you, Your Worship.
Thank you very much, Councillor Butler. That takes us to infrastructure services and Councillor Lubertz.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Infrastructure services is now in session. We have no presentations or delegations. We have, I believe, one report, IS 18-2017 Intermunicipal Transit Service Proposed 2017-2018 Service. Do I have a mover?
Moved.
Mayor Redekop, thank you very much. That report's now on the floor. Any comments or questions? Mayor Redekop?
Just had one question relative to page 3. There was a reference to a calculation error. What would that have been?
Sorry, through you, Mr. Chair. When Niagara Falls Transit was converting from hours and minutes to decimal hours, they converted their minutes wrong. So we were fortunate in that we were getting about a third of an hour service for free for a number of years.
And when they made the conversion to metric hours, we got the benefit.
That's correct. I guess the clocks move slower up there.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. That moves us to new business and inquiries. Any? Councillor Nutt and then Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Councillor Lubertz. Through yourself to Mr. Walsh. First off, I'd like to, I was wondering if you could do me a favor and extend the thanks to Sean Hutton and Matt Whale, who did a great job on the weekend responding to an urgent need out at Ott Road Ballpark, United Empire Loyalist Park. They responded very quickly and took care of some issues out there, so I just wanted to thank them both for their hard work and quick and speedy remedy to that situation. Secondly, I know I've spoken quite a few times on ditching and brushing along Ott Road and areas. You and I had some back and forth via email, but I didn't realize to the extent as to what the process was and what was involved. So understanding that the brush cutting will be done during the winter, can you just, for the benefit of council and those listening at home, just walk through our discussion there? Because I didn't realize that it was such I don't want to say it was in a dire or gray situation, but that the workload was far more than you've alluded to in the past. So if you just wouldn't mind.
Mr. Walsh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When When a ditching complaint or drainage complaint comes into town hall, we create a CRM typically. And the CRM is usually addressed within a week or two with a preliminary investigation as to sources of problems, potential solutions. If the issue is larger than going out and clearing a drainage blockage of some sort, it goes into our queue for action. That queue for drainage works is typically about a year and a half or two long right now. That does seem like a long amount of time, but I can tell you it is an improvement over what we've had in the past. Before the town bought our Gradall, which was it's about 7 or 8 years old now, that list was 7 years long. So we've made significant improvements in our productivity bringing ditching and drainage works in-house. For the upcoming summer and fall season, through the graces of council and their $50,000 use of our surplus from last year for additional drainage, we'll be issuing two contracts that will knock off about 50 CRMs out of our queue. So that's good news. But that's the big picture, and I hope that answers your question, Councillor Nutt.
Councillor Nutt?
Yes, thank you. I just didn't realize the extent the number of actual CRMs that were in there that still needed to be attended to. So thank you for that. I'd also like to take a moment to thank His Worship and the Niagara Parks Commission for their quick removal of a dead tree along the, and if you could, again, just send our thanks to Chair Thompson for helping out a very elderly lady along the parkway with a dead tree that, if it had fallen over, would have certainly caused her not to be able to get into her home or into her driveway at all. So I just wanted to say thank you again.
Mr. Walsh, just before we leave this discussion, just for the listening audience, can you explain what a CRM is?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. CRM is one of our three-letter acronyms for Customer Relation Management. It's a database of complaints and issues that comes in. It allows us to log when the initial contact is made. It allows us to log any actions and contacts we've made further out from it.
Okay. Thank you very much, Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. Mr. Welsh, I have a question with the, and you may not be able to answer this just yet, but if not, that's fine. The potential grow up that's coming in off of Garrison Road in between that stretch of highway by Rose Hill, it was brought to our attention that there may be wells in that area that they would have to drill wells and be able to have those 20 greenhouses. If that's the case, the worry is from the constituents that it will contaminate the existing wells of the neighbors. Would that be a high possibility?
Through you, Mr. Chair, drinking wells, water wells are not in the scope of our department. They're looked after by either the Ministry of the Environment or the NPCA. If I had a copy of the geotechnical study, I could give you an answer, but I don't have that study.
So I'm best then to have a discussion with Mr. Brady with respect to planning and go from there.
You can certainly have a discussion with me anytime you like. That's not a problem. The Ministry of the Environment and when a well is requested, the Ministry of the Environment has to give approval to that. And so that if the farm in this particular case wants to drill a well for their purposes, be it drinking water or be it irrigation water, as the case may be, then that the Ministry of the Environment needs to be.
Councillor Butler.
Thank you. I don't have any further questions. I'm going to collect some information before I go any further. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop and
thank
then
you.
Councilor Zankel.
Thank you. Yeah, just on that last point, I think that they would also have to get some type of approval to draw water from the aquifer. I'm not sure, but I know that Cherry Hill has to.
You're correct, and that's part of the permit for the well. 50,000 liters a day is the threshold, I've just been told.
Mayor Redekop, any further?
Can we let Councilor Butler just finish up on that point?
Councilor Zankel is good with that. You can butt in.
I'm so sorry. If they wanted to bring town water to the facility, though, they'd have that option and still have to come through the municipality. They don't have that option. Okay.
They do not.
Mayor Redekop, two questions.
You fill the floor.
Thank you. First question has to do with Ott Road resurfacing. I know it's scheduled. I know that they've got the preliminary work done. Do we have any idea exactly when that might occur?
Mr. Walsh?
Through you, Mr. Chair, I don't have the exact date right now. I know it is high on their priority list. Looking at the weather forecast for this week, it doesn't look good for placing surface treatment, tar and chip, but it does look good for dust control.
I wonder if it would be possible to check with Circle P and find out when where Ott Road sits on their list, because I know they've got a lot of roads that they're doing.
Mr. Walsh?
I can do that. I'll update council through an email.
Second thing, I was at and I meant to mention this in my announcements, I was at, along with Councillor Lubert's, a party hosted by Garrett and Kathy Reed on Erie Road. Their house was one of the ones damaged in the fire that occurred near Bay Beach last year. Their house was not completely destroyed. The two beside them were. And they hosted the firefighters. They invited the firefighters to come out, and many of them did. Their families had a great party, beautiful night, nice view. Surprising how high the water level is. There's hardly any beach there right now. But I was advised while I was there that evening that July the 1st wasn't too bad in terms of beach control. July the 4th was a bit of a nightmare in the sense that there were many, many young people still on the beach at 10:30, 11 o'clock, 11:30. And it wasn't so much that they were making noise. There was a concern that with the drinking that was going on, there might be some serious problems. I believe the police were called. I believe that the police maybe were concerned about the magnitude of the crowd. So I'm wondering whether one of the comments to me was that they don't know that this year's security at the beach is checking bags that come onto the beach as much as in the past. I don't know about that. I would like to think that they are. Many of these young people may have come to the beach after the security left. And so I'm wondering if we could maybe get a little bit of background information, Mr. Chair, about when the security leaves on holidays. I think that they should be staying there longer. I'm wondering if there's some way that we can close off the beach, because our parks close at 11, as I understand it. And now, granted, people can walk from the private properties onto that beach, but I was told 500. Let's suppose it's half. Let's suppose it was 250 people. That's still a lot of people on that beach at night drinking and carrying on, and their concern was the safety of the kids.
Yes, I think maybe we'll ask our CAO if he has any comments, or maybe Mr. Walsh. I don't know.
Through your chair to the mayor, this is the first I've heard of it. I've had any complaints this year regarding security. I know it was brought up previously at a council meeting about alcohol on the beach. I know the guys are doing a great job going around checking people who are on the beach. But this is definitely something we can look into, and if it's if it means extending the hours, it's something that we can talk to our facilities managers about when we do have a long weekend to address those issues. Fencing it off, I don't think will help. As noted, people will definitely go around the fence or find another way to the beach. So it's something we can monitor. But you know, as a last result, you can always phone the police, and as well as we will ask for the police assistance moving forward.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop.
No, that's good. I'm fine with that. I'm not suggesting that we put up fences other than the access fences to get into the beach. And just wondering whether at some point we need to maybe close off the access at some point to try to keep people off the beach from getting in through the normal entrance ways, and that would likely only be on the holidays. I mean, the Friday night that we were there, there was hardly anybody on the beach at 7:30. So anything that staff could do to look into that would be appreciated.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Zankel and Councillor McDermott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through you to Mr. Walsh. Just wanted to pass along some positive feedback with regard to a Hallmark card, which I received over the weekend, and I can tell you in 3 years I've never received a card of thanks from a constituent, but it's your team that did the work. This was regarding an emerald ash tree that was removed from a resident on Grandview Road. There was quite a bit of a stump left. They have health issues. They can only use a riding lawnmower. Anyway, to make a long story short, the town had come back out and helped them. But the card that I received, it's, bear with me here, it says, "Dear Kim, the town was at my house this morning at 7:30 a.m. in the pouring rain. The yard looks great, and I'm sure it'll do the trick. Now it's up to us to water and give the grass seed a chance to grow. Kim, we want to thank you, Sean Hutton, Matt Howell, and the Facilities Department for all your help. It's so gratifying when you can turn to our town and receive the help that we need. Again, thank you so much to you and your colleagues."
Thank you very much, Councillor. Mr. Walsh, do you have any comment on that?
Unlike the post office, we work in the rain.
All right, Councillor McDermott, I think, and then Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to piggyback on to what Mayor Redekop said. I have received the same complaint from a person who was just two doors down from your place on that night. And maybe during holidays that we have, we can maybe increase the presence of the NRP to check after hours down there and we come up with a better solution. I think we should maybe increase. I heard that the police took some time to get there. I'm not certain on how that went, but there was hundreds of kids down there, which is worrisome because you know how people like their privacy down that way. So maybe if we could step up the NRP patrols after hours, that might help when they're down on the beach.
Councilor Pizarro.
Thank you, Chair Lubberts. Through you to staff, just a note I received today, continuing on the waterfront signage that the mayor had brought up, is that it appears the welcome to our waterfront sign at Windmill Point's road allowance has disappeared. So if we could have staff take a look at that. Unfortunately, it happens around this time of year. There are some that do not embrace our public access to the waterfront as much as we do.
I'm not kidding.
And it generally had, there's one that I'm not going to mention, but generally it's that one that gets targeted, but it's not that one this time. It's Windmill Point. So hopefully it is not that, but I'm not surprised this time of year. Usually there's one or two that go missing. The bolts are still there, so it wasn't like a truck hit it, and there's pieces. So if we could replace that, I'd be very appreciative. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other inquiries? Councillor Zankel?
I just actually had a comment with regard to the beach issue and the problem that we had on the long weekend. I'm wondering if perhaps a meeting with the NRP is needed, because from this example, I can tell you what happens. Teenagers have social media. There was a message that went out on social media saying party at Crystal Beach. So that's what's contributing to all the teenagers going there. And I'm not sure whether it's something that we'll even be able to manage. I know that the NRP have access to social media outlets, and it's not Facebook that they're using, it's Snapchat. So it's nothing that can be held and stored. But I'm just wondering if it would be beneficial to have a meeting. And this question, I guess, can be directed to our CEO to work with the NRP on this, because I don't believe it's U.S. residents. In that particular case, it was teenagers sending out a Snapchat, having a party there.
Yes, thank you. I'm assuming the CAO, he's nodded, so he's going to...
Through you, Chair, to the council, I definitely will set up a meeting with the NRP.
Okay. Yes, it was. Speaking on all of that, I mean, over the last month or so, I think we've noticed an increase in just vandalism in general in our town. We've experienced Thunder Bay, you know, the park in there. They damaged the playground equipment. They went down to Queen's Circle a week or so ago and damaged some trees down in there. So maybe a meeting with the Niagara Regional Police would help, and maybe they could have a little bit more presence all over town and just trying to tackle that issue itself, because obviously somebody's getting out of control or they think they're having fun, maybe. But so anyway, those are my comments. Any other new business or inquiries? Seeing none, moves us to the business status report. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll turn the chair back over to Mayor Redekop.
Thank you, Councilor Lubritz. That takes us to Corporate and Community Services. Councilor Nutt.
Thank you, Your Worship. Corporate and Community Services now open. We do not have any presentations or delegations, nor do we have any reports, so I'll move right to new business. Are there any inquiries, new business items that anyone would like to raise? Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Chair Nutt. I just wanted to say thank you to Mr. Jansen and the finance team, as well as the support from Mr. Cookitz, for assisting in everything we needed to do to get the fireworks show done without a hitch. We ran into some snags a couple of months ago based on an organization not being able to do what they had committed to do previously. So we had to work very quickly in order to get the funds where they needed to be. And I just want to thank them for their support. And also want to say thank you to Garden City Fireworks for their patience, because they didn't have a single penny of the money in hand up until about a week prior. And they were willing to let it go, work with us. I told them we're good for the money as long as they cash the check quick. So thank you to everybody. And as well, I could have done it under infrastructure, but I saved it. Thank you to Mr. Walsh, Mr. Campbell, and Mr. Bocock for your assistance as well for the on-the-ground components. We heard a lot of positive feedback on the fireworks show, and we're already in preparations for next year. So thank you to all involved. It was a spectacular turnout. The weather held off and was a great cap to that weekend. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilor Zenko.
Thank you. I actually just wanted to further comment on the fireworks and thank Councilor Passero, because I know he puts in a tremendous amount of hard work to allow us to have a firework display. And I was present during our firework display this year, and there were thousands of people with small children that were anxiously waiting for the show. And you could just see the happiness and essentially the memories that were being created. And I can only imagine the disappointment that our residents would have if they didn't have the opportunity to have that evening. So thank you to you for advocating and lobbying for funding. In addition to, I understand that you're there mostly the day before and the day of just to make it happen. So thank you, Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Councillor Zenko. Councillor Lubritz.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to back up a little bit on some of the comments that the mayor had made regarding Garrett Reed and the night that he had on Friday night, you know, for the firefighters. And Mr. Reed made sure at that party that it wasn't just him that was hosting the party. It was the other three homeowners that had lost their homes as well. So he wanted to make sure that everybody understood that this was a joint effort between all four property owners, and his house was the only one standing, so they had it at his house. So I just wanted to make that clear. Thanks.
Thank you. Are there any other comments, inquiries? Seeing none, we'll move on to the business status report. Are there any comments or questions regarding the business status report? Seeing none, Corporate and Community Services now closed. I'll turn the chair back to you, Your Worship.
Fine job, Councillor Nutt. Scheduling of meetings, and before I get to that, I just wanted to mention that we're losing one of our long-term employees in the planning department, Dave Hayworth. He's leaving. He's a 14-year employee here. He's done a tremendous job, has worked with a lot of the environmental groups over the years in that part of our planning. And I'm sad to say that he's leaving. He's going to the region. But on the other hand, it's one more mole for Fort Erie at the region, so that we will continue to influence the region surreptitiously. So congratulations to Dave, great employee, and pleasure to have him here all those years. Scheduling of meetings. Councilor Nutt.
Yes, Your Worship. Next Monday at 9:30, we have the Transportation Steering Committee at the region.
Any other meetings? If there are none, then I will, Councilor Nutt, I'm going to go back to you for a motion to adjourn.
Thank you, Your Worship. The Town of Fort Erie Council and Committee meeting hereby adjourns at 8 p.m.
All those in favor? Thank you.